Welcome to the RD2B podcast. Each week, we sit down with a different registered dietitian nutritionist to showcase the diversity of opportunity in the dietetics profession. Our aim is to dismantle the notion that there is a traditional career path. I'm Carl Barnes, the registered dietitian behind the scenes of RD2B.
And I am Jenna Warnock, the RD2B host. Our RD guests share their stories, career paths, and advice to help students like us succeed in the profession. Welcome back to another week of the RD2B podcast. I'm your host, Jenna, and this week we're super excited to feature a registered dietitian that has a super unique and inspiring background into just how they came into the profession and what they specifically do to take advantage of dietetics as a profession. And so tonight we're sitting down with Jasmine Westbrooks. She's the co-founder and director of Eat Well Exchange, which is a nonprofit dedicated to reducing health disparities while making sure to respect and appreciate the different cultures in America, because that is definitely a good topic that dietetics has been shifting towards. And what's great is Jasmine and Eat Well Exchange, they've done a great job just for many years already implementing that idea. And so we're super excited to talk about it, just your path to becoming a dietitian. And yeah, Jasmine, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yes, me too. And we're just going to dive into, like, you know, not just you, but Eat Well and like nonprofit, just all those good things. And so the first thing that we do typically just kind of start with a little background with our guests and things like that is you mentioned, and especially in your bio on the website, that you and your family had health issues that could have been prevented with nutrition and that kind of like led you into studying nutrition and dietetics. And so Given that kind of framework, could you dive a little bit deeper into that, you know, like your experience and that process specifically as what led you to dietetics?
Absolutely. When I was in college, I actually had completed like 3 years of college with a first veterinary medicine major and then changed that to biology. And I was like the captain of like the pre-vet club. I was like, I'm going to go into this, you know, field of veterinary medicine. I had the school I had picked out, ready to go, applications. I had done tours for vet school. I mean, all the right? Like all the things. And then my parents, or specifically my mom, started to have like some GI issues one summer. And she was saying that her doctor had referred her to a dietitian. And at the time, I was like, what is a dietitian? Like, that actually sounds interesting. I think I'm going to look into it and see if my university actually, you know, has that program. And luckily they did. I had an appointment with the advisor, and Dr. Deacon was her name. I don't know if she's still teaching or not, but she gave me like the rundown. She was like, you know, you can go this food and nutrition route where it's non-clinical, or you can go into the more clinical dietetics route. And I chose the dietetics route. But then I think for me, just little signs, I call them like little God winks, you know, for me, of like little things of knowing that I was in the right place. Because I remember one time I was at a grocery store when I was kind of in that period of like, should I change my major? I'm scared. I would have to like do more college, or, you know, then what I've done. That was the biggest concern. And a lady stopped me randomly in a grocery store and was like, hey, you look like you would know something about labels, like food labels. Can you tell me if this is healthy? So yeah. And I was like, okay, I think that's a sign. And then other things continue to happen where I was like, okay, I'm going to change my major. So I did. And then that led to other, I guess, things of self-awareness, because back then I used to also model. Back before like Instagram, I would go to like modeling agencies and like do the whole runway thing. And I started to get into food that way. So my relationship with food at that age started to form. And so I was even more curious about how does food relate to our bodies. So that's just like a little bit, a clipping of how I got into dietetics.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. And it's crazy how like, you know, you just start off the bat with being like, yeah, so I was 3 years deep into vet, you know, pre-vet, and just very much dedicated to that. And then you just have a complete different, you know, just exposure and stuff, which is great. And like, just a kind of side question about that is like, how long was your process of switching from pre-vet to dietetics? Like, what, because I'm sure with making that type of leap, it's very like you had to measure a bunch of pros and cons, and it was probably like super stressful. So like, kind of zooming in into that, like what did that look like with the decision process?
Oh, I'll be very honest, it's very stressful for me. Because think about it, I had completed 2 or 3 years of a particular major, and luckily some of those things added up were because I changed it to nutrition dietetics. I had taken all the science classes, right? At least some of the ones, some of them were similar. And some of the classes I just took, I would just say, I, you know, kind of had fun with because they didn't matter. But it was very scary. It was like maybe a 2 to 3 month period. You know, I really thought about the pros and cons. For me, it was more of, would I be happy doing this? Would I be happy helping people change their relationship with food based on my own experiences? Would I be happy saving somebody's life or contributing to somebody's life like I could have for my grandparents, but it was too late, right? Like, those are the pros and cons that I looked at. And sometimes when you're in it, it's very scary. And for me, luckily I had counsel, meaning I had people that were like, okay, it could work. But then you also have people like, you're crazy. You're almost done. Like, what are you doing? So I think you have to kind of look deeper into like, what is it that you really want? Even if it means that it's going to cost you a little bit more, or it's going to be a little bit longer time in school, because at the end of the day, it's going to be worth it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's good how you kind of measured, okay, what is it that I want versus, you know, maybe what other people are saying, and, you know, just kind of like, you really do have to be honest with yourself and kind of tune into like, what do I want to do? Where do I want to make the most impact and things like that, which I think is really, really great. And so you spoke a little bit about how, you know, one of the motivators was improving people's relationship with food, or just, you know, that kind of aspect. But one of the credentials you have is that you are a certified diabetes care education specialist. There you go.
Yes.
And as you know, as far as we kind of talked about, you know, what made you want to pivot to dietetics, but as far as diabetes education kind of entering your realm of interest, or just topics that you're kind of more adept to in dietetics, what kind of made you kind of hone in on that? Like, after you honed in on dietetics, how did you kind of drill into diabetes specifically?
That's a good question, because when I first graduated from the degree, so my undergrad, I knew I wanted to go further for the internship, but I had in my mind that I only want to work in inpatient. And I was like, that's where I want to be, inpatient hospital. I got this. It wasn't until my internship where I was like, no, I don't enjoy this, you know? And I realized quickly, like, I like to educate people on the facts, and I like to educate people where it works for them. Because I truly believe there's no one size fit all. There is no generic recommendation that's going to work for everybody. You have to really consider different barriers. And I felt like at the time, working in a hospital for me, I didn't have that experience because the time was so limited, right? And then, you know, you have people that are on different medications, and they may not comprehend it because they're on different medications. So your 10 to 15 minutes, sometimes it felt like, in a sense, it almost felt pointless, but it just wasn't the type of engagement that I wanted. And so I then decided to shadow Diabetes Center, one of the inpatient dietitians recommended I do it. And I shadowed this Diabetes Center, and I was like, wow, this is what I want to do. Teaching the classes, really understanding people, building that rapport and relationship with people and groups, and giving them the facts about diabetes, because there's so much misinformation out there. And so that's where it stemmed from. And actually, another instance where it stemmed from is during my internship, one of our speakers was a diabetes educator. And she stood out so much to me because she came in with the happiest smile. She had like a little wagon with her, like all this diabetes fun type of stuff. And I know when people think about diabetes, it's like, that's not fun. But she made it that the learning part of it, and taught us how to engage with people, where it was very intriguing. And so I think that's important. I wanted to learn those skills, and I've learned them, and I see how people react, but they're like, you're different. Like, when I do a cooking demo, it's like, oh, I learned a lot just from a demonstration, you know? Oh, I learned a lot because you actually took the time to see who I am, and to learn about the foods I like, the lifestyle that I have, the time management that I'm lacking, or whatever it is. So I really feel like dietetics and diabetes combined with it has really been able to show my strengths through education as a person.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think And I love how you mentioned like the difference you saw between inpatient and, you know, being education based is like you get to know the people, you get to like build rapport, and it's a whole lot more community interaction based versus just like clinical outcomes of like, are you getting better? No, here, this, boom, call it a day. Where,
right.
And honestly, like it makes sense that, you know, you see more improvement with those people that you do see in that setting because you get to know them as a person. You're like understanding their lifestyle and you're like, hey, how can we make a direct change with what you're currently dealing with? And I think it's a great like segue just into what Eat Well Exchange is all about, like getting to know the people, educating the people, and just kind of like understanding their cultural background or just their perspective as a whole to kind of make them make long-term changes. And so kind of like shifting into that like cultural community lens, and we're kind of like segueing a little bit into Eat Well Exchange, but just before that, so like what you said, you loved educating the facts. You loved like just teaching people proper information about diabetes. And I'm sure that can be very difficult with just, you know, different people, just with how complex the disease is and how like, yes, how deep you can or cannot go with it. And so given your background in that diabetes education and also the cultural awareness that Eat Well Exchange focuses on, how do you communicate to those different populations regarding diabetes and health in general? Like, how do you navigate what to talk about, who to, like what you should focus on, all that? Because I'm sure like a lot of people might struggle with that, or nutrition students might think, how am I gonna explain diabetes to someone who doesn't even know what glucose is? You know, just kind of that type of perspective.
Yeah, that can vary depending on the population. And I want to say first, like for Eat Well, is we started Eat Well based on a problem or issue that we saw from working for the health department. And so based on that problem, we were able to create Eat Well Exchange, but in no way were we, you know, I guess in a sense prepared. We just knew we wanted to do something, so we just did, and we learned along the way, and we're still learning along the way, because nonprofit management and creating programs and things like that was very limited in our instruction throughout undergrad and graduate school. I think one of the things I've learned the most, to kind of get directly back to that question, is observation. That sticks out to me because I think you can tell from people's body language if they're comfortable with talking to you about their cultural foods. I've also learned too, it's important not to assume, because sometimes we assume that, you know, for instance, if I come in a room, someone may assume that I like soul food, right? Because I'm Black, I'm African American. But I think it's so important for us to acknowledge that there are differences even in, you know, the African diaspora. You have people that are from the Caribbean that may not share some of the same experiences as me growing up from the South in Memphis, Tennessee, where it's a little bit different. There may be similarities, but there's still some differences as well that make each of our cultures different. So I think you do have to ask certain questions to get to know a person. One of the favorite questions I like to ask is, what's your favorite food? What do you like to eat? You know? And then that to me opens up things about what they kind of love about their food and culture too. And sometimes you'll get a response, if I'm honest, sometimes you will not, and that's still okay. But it's about building that rapport. One, I guess, pivot that we've learned from Eat Well is community-based care, meaning it's similar to patient-centered, but you may come up with this grand idea of programs and things you want to do in this particular community. But that community actually may say, you know what, that's great, but actually we want this. So are you willing to pivot the conversation to fit the needs of what that community know that they need? Because people know what they need, you know, in most cases. It's just, are you able to pivot and, I guess, honor that? And so that's definitely one way to kind of connect with people, to see like, what do they want to learn? What do they want to know? And oftentimes the things that they want to know are things that they're actually already doing. They just need minor adjustments. So that's the cool part about it. They don't have to like necessarily buy an entire cookbook, or, you know, get a whole set of meal plans or whatever it is you think they may need. They may just need to start with some of the small steps. And I think that's a benefit too when working with communities and just people in general.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's great how you highlighted the, you know, sometimes they just need a minor adjustment, and that honestly makes better outcomes for sure, just because it's less, honestly, less wiping the slate clean and more just like, polishing or cleaning it up a bit more so instead.
Exactly.
And like, it's a great balance of just like, again, not making the assumptions, learning about the person first and kind of getting a background before moving forward with anything. Because again, like, you might come in with this whole big grand plan of like, we're going to do five of these things, but they're like, hey, I just really need help with like knowing when to eat, you know, or things like that. And it's like, it's great because again, you kind of know what direction they want to go, but then you also have to struggle with, okay, I had this entire thing in my mind that I have to wipe clean and just start from scratch. But I'm sure that offers like great learning experiences and stuff. And like, again, we've been alluding to Eat Well Exchange a lot, and kind of, you mentioned a little bit about the whole goal behind starting it. Like, again, you know, we recognized a problem in the health department that you were working at. And then as far as kind of us diving a little bit deeper into Eat Well Exchange, what it's all about and kind of what its focus is, you and your friend Ashley Carter are very well known for being the founders of Eat Well Exchange. And given that, again, like with what you mentioned, how dietetics doesn't really have a lot of foundational education in nonprofit, what made you guys decide to kind of go towards nonprofit and kind of make Eat Well Exchange what it is?
That's a very good question. We knew we wanted it to be a nonprofit because we wanted our communities to be able to get the information and the resources for free, because we did see a lot of disparities. We saw a lot of social determinants of health type of issues before, you know, social determinants of health was a thing. So we saw that before COVID. And what's very interesting is we saw it, the more people that we were impacting and teaching, we started to resonate with it. It's like, oh my gosh, I remember that from my childhood. Wait a minute, like, that was actually me. Or, oh my gosh, my grandmother went through the same thing. That was actually me. So we began to see little reflections of people that we love in our family, actually the same things happening. And so when I say same things happening, I mean, when working for the health department and working for WIC, and we love WIC, you know, it's a great program. They give a lot of different resources and things that are needed in these communities. We noticed though that a lot of nutrition professionals, unfortunately, would tell people to eat certain things that they may have not heard of. It was not relevant in their grocery store. It was not relevant in their cultural experiences. There was a disconnect. There was a gap. And so that's when we decided to brainstorm. Honestly, it was like a girls' night. We're hanging out and we're like, let's start a nonprofit. Like, crazy as it sounds. And we started this nonprofit, and we had known someone that was doing some of the same work in these type of communities. And we talked with them, and we had people that we talked to actually help us, guide us a little bit. But as far as management, we are still figuring it out, like what to do, applying for grants, you know, hiring a staff, all these different things that now we can think about since we've been incorporated for 7 years. So it definitely has been a learning experience for us. And it's been a roller coaster, a fun one though, one that you can scream and have fun and, and do all kinds of things.
No, for sure. And that's the best kind of be on. And actually mentioning how kind of like you guys were able to get it up and running as a nonprofit, you said, oh, you knew someone that had that foundation, or like you had a network. You could say, yes, of people who were able to help you make the nonprofit. And so just as far as like, say that someone like a nutrition student or RDB is like interested in, not maybe, I mean, it doesn't have to be a nonprofit, or say that they want to dive into something that they have no background in, no, you know, very new territory. So whenever it came to you, like forming that network and kind of knowing those people who knew about nonprofits and things like that, like, how did you kind of form that? Was it like a work relationship that you had with them? Like, how did you form that relationship with them beforehand that allowed you to use them, of course, in a professional sense, to help make your own nonprofit?
Right. That is so funny you mentioned that, because that's the part I think that scares a lot of people. The story I'm about to share of how we even connected with this like mentor that kind of, you know, helped us and inspired us to do what we currently do today. I remember actually being in my dietetic internship. I was invited to a meetup through the academy with a member interest group. So it was NOVADAN. I don't know if you've heard of NOVADAN before, National Organization of Blacks in Dietetics and Nutrition. And so we met up in Orlando at the facility of a Black dietitian that actually had programs for people in underserved communities. They had a mobile bus that went around to the different neighborhoods to sell produce, which was actually cool. And I remember telling her, it was like a light bulb. I was like, this is what I want to do, right? Like, as she's touring and showing me all the different things just from this meetup. And I told her, I said, you're going to be my mentor. And she's like, what? I was like, you're going to be my mentor. And from that point on, I made myself accountable. I made a responsible decision to say, when I say I want you to be my mentor, it doesn't mean that I'm expecting you to reach out to me all the time. I was reaching out to her. And so I think that's really important for students to learn, and just anything new that you decide to transition in or pivot in, it's okay to reach out to people and ask them if they can be your mentor. But in that relationship, you also have to hold yourself accountable to meet with them, to be able to text them, to be able to, you know, call on them, to set up appointments with them. You have to also hold yourself accountable. And because I asked to be her mentor, I was consistent with like being a great mentee. You know, I think, you know, some of these internships now they have where you can do 2 weeks of wherever, right? You can do whatever you want to do. As far as a shadowing experience, I picked her location. And this lady took me in like a daughter. Like, I stayed in her house, you know, while I was doing the internship at her facility. Like, it was the best 2 to 3 weeks I had in my life, but it really set a foundation for me. And to this day, I still talk to her about certain things. Like, this is what happened to me. Have you ever experienced that? Do you have any referrals? Do you have any resources? You know, so I think we also have to, in a sense, hold ourselves responsible and be accountable. If we decide to have a mentor, be that mentee that's going to reach out and ask the questions.
Yeah, no, and I'm so happy that you shared that story of how you found that mentor, because like that really is the foundation of like networking and making strong connections and meaningful connections. Because, and like, I think a key takeaway of that is to have a good mentor, you need to be a good mentee. And it's like definitely a two-way street. And I feel like a lot of, again, like imposter syndrome and just like feeling like you're not good enough and things like that, that can definitely be something that might stop a student from reaching out to someone. Or just like, even if they do find someone who is mentor worthy, they're like, oh, should I text them? Should I call them? It's like, they're willing. Again, like dietetics is also such a giving profession. And like, we all just want to help each other. And so it's really like, again, if someone experiences your situation where it's like, you find a dietitian or just anyone, and you're like, you're who I want to be, you're like, you're who I want to have a connection with, there's nothing wrong with, for, you know, reaching out, taking initiative and forming that connection, because that's what helped you and Ashley form Eat Well Exchange and kind of boost it up to be what it is today, which I think is such a great thing to highlight and a really good takeaway of like kind of how to practically form networks or connections. Because again, like I feel like students always hear, oh, form a network, find a mentor, do this, yeah, where it's like, okay, great. How? Like, yeah. And that's why we always do like to highlight like for dietitians and stuff, maybe like how they found their mentor, what they did, because it really helps kind of clear up a little bit of the fog of, okay, what does it even mean to have a mentor? Or like, what does it mean to do, which is really great. And and it's great to hear that she kind of helped you, you know, kickstart that nonprofit and kind of get it to where it is, which is great. But so kind of going more into nonprofits, especially in the dietetic space, RD2B as a nonprofit, you know, like it can be very difficult to maintain and continue a nonprofit without the proper support, whether it be socially, financially, or the infrastructure itself. And so how did you and Ashley set up Eat Well Exchange to remain like viable and successful and keep up with the paces that you needed, especially while executing a mission that kind of needed the proper support and to stay going on with that?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because honestly, a lot of nonprofits at some point early within their years of being incorporated, they actually kind of go under, meaning they don't have the funding, the staff in order to do certain things. And that's actually one of the things that we're in the midst of now, is figuring out how to have that sustainability, right? Because we know that we started out with 3 co-founders, myself, Ashley, and actually Deidre Washington, who was also working at WIC for us at the time. And she's still such a strong supporter of Eat Well Exchange too. But she decided it to like go into like maternal health as like a main focus. But the point is that you really for us, when we started, how can I say it? When we first started Eat Well, we had an agreement and it was like, okay, we're going to have dues, right? We're going to donate, $50 a year. We can, even if that meant two events a year, right? And when I say events, I mean like a classroom at a library, right? It could be something completely free, or it could be something where, somebody that has an establishment, or you know, a group of friends that can get together and you want to have them as your beta, right? A group of people to test out your curriculum or whatever that is. So I will say it's not an easy process to gain money, but for us, we've been very blessed in the sense that we've been able to get donors. So people like that donate to us, even through like social media or through our email list, we're able also to get funding through grants. Now, the interesting thing about grants, and I will say, because we get this question a lot when it comes to grants, is how do you all get grants? Because lately we've been getting quite a few of them. We're so blessed to be able to do that, but it does take a lot of work. But a lot of grants don't want to award you anything unless you're already doing the work. So at least for the first like 3 to 5 years, Ashley and I were doing the work and not getting paid, not having any funding to do it, very little funding to do it. And so I think that's important, that in order to start from the bottom or the beginning, you have to already start doing some of the work. There has to be some type of traction, because a lot of times the grants won't be awarded based on, oh, that's a great idea. They want to see outcomes. They want to see how many people were impacted. They want to see sustainability. So that's definitely one, the grants, the donors, and something new that we're kind of embarking on, our campaigns, fundraising events, and that takes time too, to be able to gain that momentum. So it's definitely a timing thing as well, but that's just some of the ways that we've been able to get funding from donors, donations, small grants, up until like more of larger grants. And if you follow us on Instagram, you'll see we praise anytime that we get a grant. But I think people don't understand too, behind that, for every like 10 grants we apply for, that's like one, So I think more and more we've been like transparent with our journey. Like, oh, got another denial. I'll be honest, just this week or last week, I got 3 denials, right? But I'm still going to apply. It's not going to stop me, because I know that that one is coming so that I can fund that next program and continue that next program for the community.
Yeah, and that's a great motivation and thing to keep in mind. And it was great that you highlighted, hey, for you to get grant money, you need to have some stuff backing you up before you can even get into that territory. And so whenever you were in that phase, that kind of 3 to 5 year beginning of having to put in that grunt work and kind of putting in the work up front, how did you balance your life for keeping it afloat while taking in no money, while also, balancing whatever you were doing to make money as well? Like, what did that look like?
Oh my gosh, yes. That's something I've had to learn throughout the years. And I'll be transparent with that one too. Like, I would work my 40-hour job and literally work another 10 to 15 hours throughout that week, even if it meant sacrificing some things I would do during the weekend. That's how committed I was. And it wasn't until March of this year that I actually quit my corporate job. So we had been doing all these things and I was still working in corporate, right? But still figuring out like scheduling wise things that I could do. So I think it's possible. But one thing I will say too, is dietitians, we have to get out of that mindset, or soon to be dietitians, we have to get out of that mindset that everything has to be perfect. Because we want to have an entire curriculum and a booklet already created and published before we initiate a program in an underserved community or any type of community. But that's not really realistic. You'll actually burn yourself out that way, because you may have to end up changing a lot of what you created, because you have to learn about the community and what they want, right? So I think it's important to acknowledge rest. And it's important to take the rest, but also not expect instant results. Because if I'm honest, we live in this social media culture where we see people's reels and highlights, but we don't understand how many years or hours it may have taken to get to that point. So that would be my recommendation. My takeaway is incorporate rest however you feel like rest is required for you, but also understand that there may be some times where you have to sacrifice a few things. And it doesn't necessarily have to be rest. It could be other things that you may have to sacrifice that will get you to the stepping stones of where you need to go. And it's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, and you touched on so many great things, because I think first the great perspective of it took you about 7 years to get to quitting your corporate job to fully yes. transition. And I feel like a lot of people, again, like with what you said, social media, they just see, oh, you have a really successful nonprofit and you just went straight from corporate to nonprofit. And that's just what happened. And it's like, most certainly not. That's, you know, and it's great just like highlighting that. And then also like, it's a really, what I'm glad that you mentioned is you kind of, what it sounds like is you mentioned a kind of modified version of hustle culture, in the sense of you do have to put in the hours, you do have to sacrifice some things, but you also still need sleep and you also still need to like honor your peace and not burn out incessantly. And so like, it's like the good modification of like, hey, don't try to be perfect, recognize rest when you need it, but also acknowledge the fact of, hey, you might have to do a full-time job and dedicate a couple more hours each week to put in the work. But again, it's like, if you really care about it, if it's really something you want to do, it necessarily, I mean, of course, those extra hours can make you feel burnt out at times, but if it is rewarding and if it is fulfilling, it'll hopefully mitigate some burnout. You know, hopefully. Yes. That's the dream.
That's the goal. Absolutely. Yeah. We are not supporting a burnout culture over here. I mean, Ashley and I are very good. I'm glad to just have a partner to do this with a partner, because Ashley knows, we're best friends too. Like, Ashley knows when I'm tired, right? And she can feel it, she can see it, she can hear my voice. She's like, all right, Jasmine, I think it's about time. And I say, you know what? It is about time for me to take that vacation, or to take a weekend of rest and go hiking, or do something that I really enjoy. There's so many different types of rest. I won't get into that, but it's just, rest isn't just about sleep. It's about enjoying life, period, and thinking about things that, really, I guess, in a sense, like rejuvenate you so that you can come back better, you know, and you can focus full on the nonprofit that you want.
Yeah, and like take your mind off of just what you've been focusing for 50 hours a week on and things like that. Because, yeah, it's like for you to keep going at it, you have to take breaks away from it so that you can come back not feeling super depressed and deprived and all that stuff.
Deprived, for sure, yes.
Yeah, and so you did mention, and again, like we kind of mentioned a handful of times how like diets, you know, dietetics, the educational curriculum doesn't really like mention nonprofits and all the grit that goes into it and how to actually make a sustainable, viable one. And so I'm sure it was definitely a lot of trial and error as far as it came to navigating nonprofit management. But so like, how did, I mean, of course, kind of going a bit more specific into that, how did you learn how to run and create Eat Well Exchange? And like, given that you didn't have any prior knowledge, because yes, I mean, kind of diving headfirst into it, you do have to swim as you go, you know, sink or swim kind of thing. But as far as like gaining more knowledge and gaining more understanding, what did that process look like for you with Eat Well Exchange?
Yeah, there are so many different layers to a nonprofit. I think some that stick out to me is, number one, we decided to get an advisory board, which I actually recommend. When you have a nonprofit, and then for those who don't know what an advisory board is, it's pretty much like a board of people that you select that trust and really support your mission. They align with your mission of the organization that you decide to co-found or to fund or found. So we have a board of people who get the vision, and they get the vision, they get the mission, they get our values, right? And so why is that important? Because we'll have advisory meetings throughout the year, and we go over all the things that we've done. We go over accounting things. We go over ways that they can help us with our nonprofit, whether it's like getting out in the community with us and promoting our nonprofit, or just giving us sound advice. And most importantly, they keep us on track. And what I mean by that is, me and Ashley can have some of the best ideas, right? Like, I'm telling you, just great ideas. But then that advisory board is like, hold on, that's not lining up with the mission, you know, or that's not lining up with the vision. And so it allows us to really stay aligned with our mission and our vision. And that's very important. And then as far as just nonprofits, learning about them, for us, we've taken webinars before. Like I know Ashley has taken like a grant type of webinar or a workshop that she was able to do. So that's definitely one of her stronger points, where she helps a lot with like us applying for grants and local grants and state grants or whatever they are. For me, I have a love of like collaboration and working with brands. And so that's been a strength of mine, and like negotiating. I love to negotiate. So to me, it's like using those strengths of who you are, but also finding people that may be able to donate time and to use their strengths in your organization, right? So I think that's an important balance too. And then what else can I think of as far as nonprofits? Oh, one other thing that I'm starting to get really into, because I'm actually new to North Carolina, I've been here for a couple of years, is actually being on boards for different nonprofits. So you as a dietitian or dietitian to be, you can say, you know, you want to be on a particular board, maybe an organization that's doing similar work that you want to do. And you can learn from that experience, right? So it's just about putting your face and showing up to different places of people that you want to be similar to, you know, or spaces that you want to be in. So that's another takeaway point I would give my RD to bees.
Yeah, that's so great. And I think it's also really great how, like, whenever, you know, I ask the question of, hey, like, how did you learn about nonprofit whenever you had no prior, like, proper education or experience on it, the answer was really pivoted to, well, you're not completely on your own. Like, you know, you have a support system, and it's vital that you get a support system that plays to your strengths and also to your weaknesses, so that it's like an actual, you're able to grow from that. And it was great mentioning an advisory board. And again, to kind of like add to the fact of, hey, you're not on your own, you have people there to support you, but then also like being part of other nonprofits to see how they run. Because again, it's definitely a collab, like it's the, like at the end of the day, it's not a you're on your own piece of trying to run the entire thing. It's definitely like putting your face to where it matters and like playing to your strengths, taking advantage of that. Because again, like cycling back to burnout, if you try to learn something that's just not meant for you to learn, or like that's okay. Like if you try to learn something that's just not your forte and is just way more time than needed to understand, then that's okay. More people exist that have those strengths to help you out. And it's just good to focus on that and know that, like, again, because I do feel like a lot of dietitians and RD2Bs, they're just kind of like, oh, it's all on me to do everything and to solve
everything.
Like I'm supposed to be the messiah of this nonprofit and it's just be me doing everything. And it's like, no, like, again, learning how to collaborate, learning how to first off, like being honest with yourself, like your strengths and weaknesses, and knowing how to tailor that to where it works best, which I think is really great. And so that was a lot of great information just about like Eat Well, what it does, and like nonprofit management in general, especially for dietitians. But as far as you personally, because I mean, again, like you've had a lot of great experiences both before becoming a dietitian, nonprofit, all that jazz. But what would you say has been the most rewarding aspect of your dietetics career? Which I'm sure can be a loaded question, but if you can.
Oh, yeah. I could definitely give like a really general answer. And actually, this is a question that we spoke at FINSE in Denver, and that was one of the questions. And I'm always reminded of the most rewarding is that I'm honoring my family. And I remember tearing up when I was answering that question at FINSE, and I'm like, oh my God, somebody give me a tissue, right? Because I've had a lot of family members pass prematurely because they were not taught how to eat their cultural foods. You know, and for me, it's honoring their lives of who they are, the great people that they are. I can't tell you how many times that I've had people in my programs where it's like, oh my gosh, you remind me of my auntie, or you remind me of my grandmother, or you remind me of whoever that may have passed away. And to me, that's how I know I'm going in the right direction, because if I can help make somebody's life easier with the skill set and the gift that I have through Eat Well Exchange, that is what is rewarding to me. And I know there's, you know, you have to really go into it in this type of field. Honestly, nonprofit is not about you. It's about the people that you're serving. if it's about you, it's not a good industry to be in. I'm just going to be very honest. It's about the community. And so for me, it's honoring them and seeing the lives that we're changing, the people that are like, thank you, Jasmine. You know, nobody's ever told me that before, you know, or thank you, Jasmine. I like trust you because I know that you have my best interest at heart. Right. So that's the rewarding part for me.
Yeah. And I think it's great because, and I think it's such a great position to be in where you're able to identify a vision, a passion, or a goal that you feel so aligned and in tune with that it brings tears or it brings an emotional side of you out. Because I think that is such a great indicator of just like, yes, I'm in the right, you know, I'm doing the right thing. This is for me. And like, it's a really good reassurance of just like, yes, this is definitely where my passion lies. And again, that's not saying to other people like, oh, if you're not tearing up about your next career as a dietitian, then that's not the one for you. But it's like, but it's also just kind of, you know, if you ever want to think of just areas or think of not, if they're interested in nonprofit, again, like if you have an emotional connection to it, that's really going to help dictate whether or not you're going to feel invested in it and want to put time into it, which again is just a great thing to highlight. And it, yeah, so like definitely mentioning how like, you know, you wanted to honor your family and kind of decrease the health disparities with nutrition and help with preventative medicine, respecting the cultures and all those wonderful things. And it's great having that topic emphasized because I do feel like that's like with what you saw in WIC, that was definitely something underrepresented and not focused on. But are there any other areas of dietetics you wish had more attention or support on? Or, and then like kind of another side thing to that, do you feel like there's certain topics in dietetics that are overemphasized that you feel like should be balanced out with some topics kind of misrepresented?
That's a really good question. I think when it comes to like different topics, and we talk about this a lot like in our presentations, because we provide presentations to like WIC departments for like cultural training or cultural competency related focus on, you know, culture focused nutrition. We provide education to universities. I mean, the list goes on to like different professionals. What I've noticed is sometimes, and this is one that sticks out to me for whatever reason, is an example would be like, you know, if you have heart disease, okay, Mediterranean diet, right? Or a certain type of diet, where people don't see necessarily their foods reflected in it. And it doesn't mean historically that it's not reflected, but people don't look at historically, what, you know, how their foods are being reflected. You know, if somebody has diabetes, they're going to be like, okay, what type of diet I need to be on? And oftentimes it's a certain type of diet where their foods may not be reflected. So I would definitely say that just having an open mind to the different foods that maybe you have no idea what they are. Being open to being that lifelong learner is important. And even like with Eat Well, and for me, I'm only an expert in my own experience, but I can relay a lot of the concepts that we teach about in culture-focused nutrition educations of how I can be that lifelong learner and start to relate or understand people's culture, even though I may not have experienced that same exact thing, in some type of way I can probably relate. So I think that would definitely be one instance or example that I look at where, you know, I wish there was more of a focus on just like a variety of different foods that we do have that we may not know about. And as dietitians, I know we're the experts in nutrition, right? But don't let it go to your head too much because, you know, there's a lot of foods and practices out there that could be best versus what we recommend sometimes. I wish there was, oh, I know one. I wish there was more research out there around culture focused type of foods and nutrition. I know there's a lot of research pending, and I actually just attended a webinar about like culture focused nutrition or some studies and things like that. But I feel like there needs to be a lot more research in that area because I know that the nutrition field respects a lot of the research that comes out. And so we have that constantly, you know, think about the amount of research studies on the Mediterranean diet compared to other cultures of food, there is no comparison, you know? So I think we do have a lot of work to do in that space. Shout out to the researchers, I know a few, for the work that they're doing to put a positive light on different cultures' foods, if possible.
Yeah, and I think it's so great how you mentioned how we're in very much a diet focused, again, not in the sense of like, oh, keto, whatever, you know, that, not just that, but also diet focused of like, oh, a diabetes diet, hypertension diet, the DASH diet, Mediterranean diet, like, you know, just all these different diets. When it's like, again, like, for example, like, I'm so glad that you mentioned there's so much research on the Mediterranean diet, whereas like the reason why, but again, like if you look at those research articles and like what they dive into as to why it's so beneficial, it's like, oh, it's low in saturated fat and high in the healthy fats and like lean proteins and things like that. It's like that can easily be translated into so many other different cultures. And like, you could absolutely strip away the Mediterranean diet part of it and just look at what makes it like the new, again, like us tailor what our expertise is in of like analyzing nutrients. We can analyze what's in the Mediterranean diet, and we could just, you know, just transfer the same trends into so many other different cultures and so many other different formats. But again, it's great that you mentioned how like, yeah, that needs to be uplifted more and that needs to be focused on more. And I think again, like Eat Well Exchange is doing a great job at that, at being like, what different cultures are, what they need. And a thing that you said that really did stick out to me was you're only an expert in your own experience, because I think that's just a great line to go by, just as far as empathy, understanding, and just learning about different people. Because it's like, yes, we can be experts of nutrition, but we're not experts of other people's culture. We're not experts of other people's backgrounds. And it's like, we can come in with what we know, but we also have to come in knowing that we don't know everything as well. And again, I think you just hit so many good points that do need to be highlighted. And I'm glad that research is slowly getting pushed out, but I mean, hopefully it does sound, I mean, we are definitely in a transitional part of dietetics that it, again, we are shifting, like, cause I'm taking cultural foods right now and we are, it's very, very exciting and fitting, but we read an article about how a dietitian wrote a piece on me, like, yeah, exactly how you mentioned the Mediterranean diet isn't the only diet, and like other like avenues and stuff that they can go towards instead of praising this one diet. And it's good to see us shifting farther away from it. And again, it's also not to say that the Mediterranean diet's bad. Like, if you like those foods, yeah, please, by all means, eat those foods, but also not feeling like it's exclusive and that that's the only way to live longer and be healthy and all that jazz. But no, that was just a lot of great things that you hit. And so as we're like just winding down a little bit and kind of going more towards into like overall reflections, advice, you know, things that RD2B or nutrition student could really take away, you know, now as they're listening. So given that you had a rather unique pathway towards becoming a dietitian, is there anything you wish you knew while pursuing the credential that you wish you heard while going through your journey?
Yeah, I wish my calling was sooner, you know, before I completed those 3 years, but no hard feelings with that one. Things I wish I would have known. You know, okay, so I have this saying, and Ashley laughs at me all the time about this, is I don't want to have any regrets. And what I mean by that, I think that's what drives me to like approach people if I want them to be my mentor or to approach them through an email, because I don't want to live in regret of what could have been if I would have just acted. And so I think that's maybe one of the things. I mean, that can be broad, but I live in this space where just go for it and see what happens, you know? A lot of times we don't go for it because we're fearful, we're scared, we're not good enough. The imposter syndrome starts to kick in, if I'm honest. We want perfection instead of progress. But, you know, you can kind of compare it to like a baby, right? When a baby first starts to crawl, they don't just get up and start running, right? Like, if a baby did that, please somebody post it on Instagram so I can see it. But it just doesn't happen that way, right? So I think it's important for us to go into it scared. Because a lot of things I've gone into with Eat Well, I've been like so scared. So many experiences where I may have spoke up and my voice was trembling because I was terrified. But now when I look back on it and after I was done, I was like, yes, I'm so happy I did that, scared and all, because it set me up for the next challenge, right? So go into it in a way, I know it's promoted all the time, be fearless, right? But if we're honest, we're going to have fear, but let that fear ignite you into doing it anyway, you know? So.
No, that's so great. And I think it's good mentioning how it's like, yeah, it's not just being fearless, but it's like my takeaway from that is if you recognize something that scares you, that's honestly an indication of like, you should probably do it and stuff. And like, I can absolutely attest to the living with no regrets and like just kind of shooting your shot and seeing what happens, because the way that I found out that I was going to go to Virginia Tech next year was I was looking at my options, of course, and like stressed like any senior applying to grad school and dietetic internships and things like that. And I heard about just like the different, again, with the master's degree, you can have a bunch of different options of like, you could do thesis, you could do standalone, you could do combined, you could do just so many different ways. And for me, I just knew that I had a calling for research specifically. And so I was just like combined, I wasn't feeling a calling to combined. Like that wasn't what I was looking for. But I realized that like thesis-based masters, research-based masters, that was like the scary calling of like, okay, that's what I'm interested in, but also that seems really hard, or like I can't do it, you know, just that whole thing. But I shot an email to Virginia Tech and one thing fell after another, and had I not like emailed them, I would have not found a faculty advisor that conveniently had a trial that was opening up the fall, like the semester that I would be starting, and that they were looking for someone conveniently with a dietetics background, and that program funding my tuition and giving me a stipend and just kind of covering all those things. Yeah. And so it's like, again, attesting to what you said, where shoot your shot, because even if you don't make it, it's still, again, like it's the phrase of you miss 100% of the shots that you don't make.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just super great. And I'm glad that you mentioned it in a more realistic perspective of like, you're going to be scared. It's not like you're going to do it and it's going to be easy peasy, but it's like, if you do find something that's scary, that means that you should at least poke it, you know, like you should at least like kind of see what happens.
And I think too, people forget, like, I had a mentor, by the way, you can have as many mentors as you need, because I've had plenty, but I had a mentor once tell me, she used to use this phrase all the time. And I get it. It's like clarity of what you need to do is in the doing, right? Clarity is in the doing. So if you just sit on it and you're just like, you know, I'm scared to do it, so I'm not going to do it, you're never going to know if it's what you are supposed to do anyway. So clarity, a lot of times, the clarification of who we are and what we need to do, it comes in the action of actually doing it. And then you start to see if it's for you. And I tell students that all the time, that we like mentor and that we have as interns, you know, they say, oh, I want to have a nonprofit. And I say, are you sure? You're right. Like, and it's not to be negative, but it's like, I want you to do the things so that you can have clarity around this is what you want to do. Right. So if anything, if you don't remember anything else in this podcast, I want you to remember clarity is in the doing, and do it scared as heck. Right. But you got to do something. You just can't stay stagnant, you know, and wish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely like choice paralysis and decision paralysis and just all that. When it's like, if you just like pick one thing and you just do something, that's absolutely and 100% better than nothing. And I think that's just such a great message to give out. And I'm glad that you just emphasized that. But then the final question that we do just kind of want to end on, and it's definitely, it can be as specific or broad or as, you know, motivational speech as you would like, but if there's one thing that you could let all aspiring dietitians, or even just current dietitians, but just dietetics as a whole, is there a message that you would want to give to those students or just want everyone to know? Which again, it could be as specific, as broad, it could be just any message that you'd want to give.
I would say, especially since what I'm going through in life, you know, right now with so many different things, you know, the transition of my business, getting married in April, oh my gosh, like planning a wedding, like doing all these things where there's transitions for me, I would say embrace the pivot. And a lot of times that pivot, it sounds scary. You know how we are with as humans, we resist change at all costs, right? So I would say, number one, just embrace the pivot and start with one thing at a time. A lot of, again, a lot of times we we have this huge idea. And I think actually Oprah said this. I hate to go on the podcast and be like, oh, Oprah said, but I think Oprah even said something like this about, you can have all the things you want in the world, but it's just not at the same time. And I think that's where I am right now. You can, we, everyone that wants a nonprofit and truly feels it in their spirit to do so, definitely do it. But it took us 7+ years to get to where we are. And for some of you all, it may take less because there's a lot more emphasis on the subject matter now. But baby steps, just kind of like what we tell our patients too, you know, one goal at a time. Why do we need all these very specific goals, like 10 specific goals that you want to accomplish, when we need to focus on that one? And then oftentimes that's going to lead us to the next. So that would be my takeaway. I feel like that was more than one takeaway. Sorry.
Well, no, that's honestly, the more the merrier. And it's great, just kind of, again, that reminder of honestly practice what we preach to the people that we educate on nutrition all the time, you know, baby steps, one step at a time. And how honestly, yeah, like having a 10 step, like if you have a 10 step plan, by the time you get through step one, all 9 other steps are probably going to have changed. And so then it's like no point in having this broad, you know, super like obscure 5-year plan, when really it's like, once you take one step at a time, that will lead from one to the next. And again, it's just, it's also remembering to always take steps and not to feel like you have to like pause for forever until you can make that next step. But no, that those are really great words to end on. And Jasmine, we covered so many great things just about your nonprofit, about culture, and about just like things in dietetics that need to be talked on more, and just great advice for nutrition students. No matter if a nutrition student's interested in a nonprofit or not, there's so many great things they can take from this episode. But thank you so much for just talking about all these things and taking time to just, again, educate dietetics about all the amazing topics and things like that. But yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.